Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming. The North Atlantic Council met this morning. Nations were given a detailed update from the Commander of Operation Unified Protector, Lieutenant General Charlie Bouchard, on our Prevent and Protect mission in Libya, preventing attacks and the threat of attacks in order to protect the civilian population and civilian centres as mandated by the United Nations. As you know, our partner nations, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates and Sweden, are now routinely participating in air operations over Libya, which is tangible evidence that NATO is part of the broader international effort. And this afternoon, the NAC will be meeting again with Jinping, the chairman of the African Union, to discuss the situation in Libya and ensure full transparency as part of the wider agenda of consultations between NATO and the African Union. The Secretary General was in Turkey yesterday to discuss the full agenda that we have before us as we prepare for the NATO Foreign Ministers meeting in Berlin next week. But he will be briefing you about that agenda in person next Monday, probably at 1400. And with that, I'm very happy to introduce Brigadier General Mark van Oom, Chief of Allied Operations at SHAPE, who will brief on NATO's operations in Libya in support of the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973. General.
Thank you for the introduction. The arms embargo part of the mission started on the 23rd of March. Currently, 18 ships and submarines from 9 nations are enforcing the arms embargo in the maritime approaches to Libya. These maritime assets are supported by several surveillance planes. To date, 76 ships in total have been hailed, 28 yesterday. So far, there have been no violations of the arms embargo. So the arms embargo effectively assists in reducing the flow of arms, related material, and mercenaries into Libya. Normal shipping activities continue in the Mediterranean Sea. Ships are told exactly what to do, and if they follow the instructions, they can proceed with minimum disturbance. Yesterday, for example, 2 ships were inbound for the Tripoli harbor, and 3 ships were outbound of Benghazi and Tripoli harbors. The no-fly zone is in effect. Nations are providing the assets we need to ensure that no non-authorized aircraft enters or exits Libyan airspace. Libyan Air Force aircraft are not flying anymore as of mid-March. In order to protect civilians and civilian populated areas under attack or threat of an attack, 14 strikes were executed yesterday. A number of those strikes were in the Misrata area, which hit pro-regime air defense systems, tanks, and other armored vehicles. Around Brega, we struck a rocket launcher that was firing. And elsewhere, targets included ammunition storage facilities. In these strikes, a number of nations were involved. With the arms embargo and the no-fly zone in effect, we as NATO deconflict our operations with necessary humanitarian assistance flights, shipments, and ground moves into and inside Libya. We have to do this deconfliction in order to ensure that these humanitarian movements can be done in a safe way. Over the last few days, we have been notified about a total of 17 humanitarian movements, 8 of which were maritime, 5 by air, and 4 by ground move. That's all I have for my opening statement, but I'm more than happy to take questions.
And we'll go to AFP.
Pascal Mallet, Agence France-Presse, AFP. General, two questions. First, if I understood, you mentioned 14 strikes were executed yesterday. If that does include as well reconnaissance and targeting missions, it means that in one day the number of missions fell down from 58 because of bad weather, and the day before it was 70, according to Naples figures. And now that the US have left, or maybe not because the US have left, we have only 14 missions, strike sorties. Could you explain? Second question. Do you consider normal that a certain number of forces are still not under NATO command, including important assets like US drones, which are very useful for many things, as you know, including an entire French aeronaval group with one aircraft carrier, plus two frigates, plus one submarine, meaning 16 planes of the French Navy are flying without, if I understand, under national command only. It was the same with the amphibious ship with US Marines the day before. I don't understand how I can still write that NATO took command of anything.
Okay, to address your first question, in total, yesterday, the number of sorties was 150. Out of those 150 sorties, there were 58 strike sorties. But as you probably know, that strike sorties are intended to identify and engage appropriate targets, but do not necessarily deploy munitions every time. So the 14 strike sorties I mentioned were strike sorties that used ammunition and they hit targets, as I made clear in my opening statement. So it's 150 in total, 58, 14 used munition. That's clear for you? That with regards to the forces under NATO command, I think in general we can say that the commander of the Joint Task Force, General Bouchard, has the assets he needs to execute his mission under his command.
But how does he cooperate with other forces which are also striking? How do you coordinate? And who is responsible?
He is commanding those assets that have been formally transferred their authority from the nation to NATO, and he's commanding those forces, and that's what he has to do the job with, I would like to say.
DPA?
Alvise Ermelini from German press agency DPA. Two questions, if I may. One was, there were some reports over the weekend about rebel fighters being hit by NATO planes. Do you have any information on the investigations that were conducted on this? And the second question is, I'm still confused about my colleague's previous answer. I mean, last week we were reporting that NATO had taken sole control of operations against Libya, and I stress the word sole. So now it doesn't seem that this is the case. So what is the situation? Thank you.
Okay, with regard to the reports over the weekend, you referred to the Breka incident. Well, we have looked into the incident, and with all that we know today, our assessment is that it has been an unfortunate accident. And of course, you have noted that the opposition forces have already stated that it was their fault that they have been giving some celebratory fire in the air, which tracked the reaction. And they already learned their lesson out of that. And they have now moved those very enthusiastic young people away from the front line and have directed more experienced people to the front line. And they have given clear directions that those celebratory fires should not be used anymore. Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty clear that NATO is in command of the operation Unified Protector. So NATO is in the lead.
AP.
Yes, General, you said yesterday there were 14 airstrikes. Can you give us a rundown on the previous 3 days? How many airstrikes were carried in the first 3 days? Thank you.
I don't have the exact numbers of strikes the previous day, but I have an overall number. When we look at the total of strike sorties conducted, then we have the total of 334. But I don't have a breakdown in more detail at the moment here with me, but this is the total I have here.
What we have is a total of 851 sorties and 334 strike sorties. But as the general was explaining, strike sources identify, engage targets. They don't necessarily strike targets every time. And I think you can safely assume that the operational tempo continues unabated. Al Arabiya.
Nordi Fridi from Al Arabiya News Channel. I have a couple of questions. There are these 2 or 3 days, there are enough reports about suggesting that Al-Qaeda is supplying itself from this, let's say, Libyan bazaar arms, which is some cars left to north of Niger, and some other reports are suggesting that the former detainees from Guantanamo are in the front line with the revolutionary or the... You have your own intelligence and you have the intelligence of the allies. Can you confirm this, these reports? I have a second question. It's about the relationship between NATO and the transitional National Council. Because some of the allies are recognizing and even supplying them arms or equipment, does NATO have any contact with the Transitional National Council, and if not, when you will have a kind of liaison officer with the Transitional National Council? Thank you.
With regards to your first question, I don't have detailed information about what you were saying about those people in the front line. I don't have any detail about that. And with regards to your second question, with the relation of NATO with the TCN, there is no contact.
Obviously, as you know, some NATO allies and partners have recognized the Transitional National Council. France, Italy, and Qatar have already done so. But NATO, as an alliance, has no contact with the Transitional National Council.
General, slightly confused about this command and control issue. I mean, perhaps you could clarify it. To say that NATO is in the lead suggests to me that it's slightly different from what the Secretary General announced several days ago in terms of full command and control and total command and control. Could you detail what forces taking part in the various missions are not under NATO command and control? And, for example, do these figures, 851 sorties in total, 334 strike sorties, does that refer purely to NATO-commanded sorties or to everybody?
The numbers of sorties I gave you were all executed under NATO command. Yeah, of course there are assets under national control in the area, but the commander on Lieutenant General Bouchard, he's commanding all those assets that are on the command of NATO. And they are doing the operation. So if a nation has national assets which they want to employ under national control, that's not under NATO command, but it has to be, of course, if they want to do it, it has to be coordinated with NATO.
Reuters.
Two questions. Following up on my colleague's questions about the amount of firepower used in the first days of the NATO strikes, I understand that you don't have numbers on the number of strike sorties that actually led to actual strikes, but can you give us some sort of a comparison as to the amount of firepower used in the days since NATO took over control to the beginning of the operations in the middle of March? And the other question regarding shipping and the naval blockade. There was a petrol tanker that arrived in Tripoli port today to deliver petrol and fuel supplies to Gaddafi forces. Based on what you're saying, I presume that the argument for allowing this ship to come through is because it's commercial shipping.
With regards to the firepower, I think we all have seen over the last days and weeks that it's a dynamic situation that has evolved over time. And the situation in Libya and, for example, also the targets that are being presented have changed since the coalition started the operations and since NATO has taken over. So I think it's not possible to make a good comparison because the situation has changed. But in general terms, we as NATO now generate this, roughly saying, the same amount of sorties as the coalition did in the early days. Yeah, about I don't have the details about the ship with the petrol coming in, but as I said, within the Mediterranean Sea, we want commercial shipping to be executed as normal as possible without the minimum disturbance. And this ship, which I don't know for sure, if that's a commercial shipment, then it has to continue.
We are enforcing United Nations Security Council resolutions 1970 and 1973 on the arms embargo. AP.
Yes, General. You mentioned that yesterday there was a strike on a rocket launcher firing near Brega. You mentioned this rocket launcher that was hit while it was firing. Now, there's been fighting there between the two sides. Was the rocket launcher firing at civilians or at the rebel forces? Because if it was firing at the rebel forces, the obvious implication is that NATO is taking sides.
I don't have the details about to which target those rockets were firing, but they were firing as they were targeted. But I also want to make clear that what we have seen is that pro-Gaddafi forces have changed their tactics over days. And what we see is that they more and more are using trucks, light vehicles, to move their personnel to the front line, and that they are keeping, as we military call it, their more heavy equipment like tanks and other stuff, armored vehicles, in their second echelon. So what you see is that the opposition forces are being confronted with the more lightly pro-Gaddafi forces, and they don't see the second echelon because that's far behind. So what we now try to achieve is that we try to identify where those heavy assets like tanks and armored vehicles are, because we have seen that they have chosen to hide themselves into urban areas, even using human shields, in order to be not targeted. So the effect of what we are doing is already that he is hiding his heavy assets, but that's also preventing him from using those assets, and therefore they cannot be a threat to the civilian population. So without even targeting them, we already have an effect that he can't use them.
Gaddafi forces need...
Could you introduce yourself, please?
Dubai Television. Gaddafi forces need fuel for tanks, for vehicles. Is NATO considering fuel as arms supplies or civil and commercial supplies for the embargo? Huh? Non, je peux dire en français? Gaddafi forces. Do you consider fuel and petrol as arms? Because Gaddafi forces are urgently in need for fuel now, and you said that NATO have only respect the arms embargo, but the national, the council in Benghazi said that the fuel is a kind of arms. Second question, do you have any idea of the impact of the NATO strike over the military capacity of Gaddafi?
Could you repeat the second one, please?
Do you have any idea of the impact of the NATO strikes over the Gaddafi forces now?
Okay, we should shout number.
If you want to.
Yeah.
On your first question, my recollection is that the UN Security Council resolution concerns the supply, sale, or transfer of arms, but we can look into that.
On your second question, I just echo what General Bouchard told the North Atlantic Council this morning, and that his assessment is that we have taken out 30% of the military capacity of the pro-Gaddafi forces.
Telegraph.
Bruno Waterfield, Daily Telegraph. I'm sorry to come back to this question of command and control. We were told very categorically that when NATO assumed full command and control, that the coalition was over in terms of military operations. Can you just tell us, I mean, my colleague from AFP detailed some national assets. Are those national assets being used for military operations outside NATO's command and control? Are any of those assets that are American and French being used outside NATO's command and control?
The coalition is over. NATO is in command. And as I said earlier, we use for NATO-led operations those assets that have been formally transferred to NATO. And I said there are still national assets in the area, but they are not commanded by NATO. And if a nation wants to use them, they can do two things. They can additionally transfer the authority to NATO, or if they want to employ it on a national basis, they have to coordinate that with NATO. Not that I'm aware of. That is really happening at the moment.
But remember, we're just in day 6 of Operation Unified Protector. Yeah. ARD?
Marion von Haaren, General, you mentioned weapon embargo is working now, but what about weapons coming from other countries, from Chad, from Somalia, and other countries by land?
The arms embargo, what we are doing, is securing the maritime part of it, and that what goes by air. So what comes in by land, we have also asked the neighboring countries to make it a broader effort to make sure that no weapons are going into Libya.
Do you have any information about it?
I don't have information about what the neighboring countries are doing, or if they already have seen possible violations or whatever. So, I want to bring one more detail with regards to the command and control relations. We have known that on a national basis, humanitarian assistance movements have been executed using national assets to provide a maritime escort or even a plane flying above a ship. And that's what I mean with national operations coordinated with NATO using national assets. So you could say that nothing is happening without NATO knowing and being coordinated on a national basis.
Answer.
Yes, Marisa Solani from ANSI, Italian News Agency. It's always about the embargo, weapon embargo. According to a report this morning, NATO forces blocked four ships for the rebels carrying food and weapon. And they were left from Benghazi to Misurata. My question is, what happened now to these ships? I mean, it's normal also to block ships that are carrying all food, not only weapons.
Yeah, I say the situation is very dynamic and fluid, so operations are ongoing as we speak. Our task force at sea will continue to enforce the arms embargo. If arms are discovered, they will be confiscated. But if there is aid or other things, like you mentioned, are on board, they will be allowed to continue to the destination, and so they can proceed with where they were going to their destination. So.
Remember that boarding and searching are routine parts of our operation. Okay.
Yes, Gérard Goudin, Belgian News Agency. I would like to ask you if you can provide us some more details concerning the coordination between NATO forces and national assets. How and where does it take place?
Well, as you know, that the operational headquarters is in Naples, where the commander of the Combined Joint Task Force, General Bouchard, is working together with his headquarters. And if on the operational level coordination has to be done, that's the place where the coordination is happening.
With liaisons officer, or?
There are many ways to do that, including liaison officers.
Kai Niklas from German television ZDF. How can I imagine the practice? If France would like to fly an attack, will they inform NATO or will they just do it? Or will they ask NATO for the permission to do it? What is the procedure?
No. France is one of the nations that are in this operation. So there is no need for them to do it on a national basis. They are part of the NATO operations.
Just to follow up, please. But you just said they are doing their own thing. So I would like to understand, are they asking NATO for the possibility to do it, or are they just doing it? So what is the practice?
I will explain you how that works. Nations now have transferred their assets to NATO command. So we use them for NATO operations. If a nation wants to do an operation like assistance for a humanitarian shipment, but what they can do is that they temporarily, what we call chop back, that asset to national control for the time they need it for that national operation. And when that operation is over, then they can go back to NATO command being transferred again. That's the way it can be done. You understand?
We are talking about humanitarian operations and protection of humanitarian operations under national responsibility. We're not talking about air sorties. Over there, Wall Street Journal.
Thank you. Just to clarify that, so the operations that are under national command, none of those operations under national commands would be air sorties, air strikes. Every air strike, every air sortie under the protection of civilians under the no-fly zone would be directly under NATO command. That's the first question.
Absolutely.
Secondly, if there are separate commands for separate operations, such as humanitarian operations, I think military advice in the past is separate commands is a kind of suboptimal situation because you have a greater likelihood of friendly fire incidents and that kind of thing. Would you say the current situation then is suboptimal? The third question relates to ground control. There's a number of sources in Libya, opponents of the regime, have said that NATO ground controllers are in place in Libya. Now, I'm told that that may be under national. If that's the case, that would be under national. That would be done by national militaries. My question is, if they are by national militaries, is NATO forbidden to use ground controllers with boots on the ground in Libya from directing strikes in Libya?
Okay, I can absolutely say that all air sorties are executed under NATO command, except for those humanitarian assistance flights which a nation wants to escort themselves. That can be, so that is on a national basis. But all these strikes, sorties, are being flown on a NATO command. With regards to your separate commands, of course, if you do things on a national basis, you have to coordinate that, and that's the way it has to be done, but that's the only way you can do it. But it can be done. And with regards to your the ground controllers, there are no ground controllers on the ground from NATO.
Directing NATO strikes?
Yes. No.
Remember, under UNSCR 1973, there are no ground operations. Financial Times.
Yes, General. Peter Spiegel from the Financial Times. Can I ask you to focus on Misrata for a second? You mentioned in your opening statement 14 strikes in the last 24 hours. I think your wording was that many of them were in Misrata. Can you give an actual figure of how many were focused on that area? Because it does seem to be the city with having the most dire situation right now. Also, you mentioned this issue with tanks and other heavy equipment hiding in urban areas. Is that happening in Misrata as one of the examples? And finally, because they're having humanitarian issues in the city, any thoughts to opening aid corridors or using NATO assets to do that, to help citizens and civilians in that area? Thank you.
I don't want to go into exact details how many sorties go into Misrata or Brega or other areas. But absolutely, Misrata is a number one priority because of the situation on the ground over there. And we have absolute confirmation that in Misrata, tanks are being dispersed, being hidden, humans being used as shields in order to prevent NATO sorties to identify, target those assets. So that's happening in Misrata. Currently, there's no planning with regards to air corridor or whatever.
General, can we understand from your comments on the unfortunate incident of Brega that you are depending on intelligence from the rebel troops, or what is the situation exactly for intelligence and on the ground? And my second question is related to the density. How do you evaluate the density of the movement of Gaddafi troops coming from Benghazi, from Tripoli, from the west to the east?
Tarek, can introduce yourself, please.
Tarek Mahmoud from the Middle East News Agency.
Okay, because we as NATO, we have no boots on the ground. It's very difficult to do an investigation or a battle damage assessment to make exactly get clarity what has happened. So we are depending on the material we have, and of course we get information via open sources, through press reports, through statements from opposition, to get a clear picture of what's happening there. But we cannot confirm ourselves because we are not on the ground ourselves. With regards to movements and density, we sure see that from the pro-Gaddafi forces, their main effort is in the east. So they are putting their forces in position with a main effort in the east, and that's what we are seeing and analyzing.
To the east.
Yeah.
How are still coming, or they are now stationed in the east and this all?
When I talked about the change tactics earlier, we see that what is moving are those forces, those light forces using vehicles and trucks. The heavy equipment is not moving. They are hiding. They're dispersed, not to be a target. But as soon as we see them starting moving, and that's why we also are increasing the number of recce flights, reconnaissance flights, in order to be able to see if they are going to come out of their hidings to start moving towards the east, then they have a what we call a hostile intent, then we can target them. So we are closely monitoring where we know they are, and when they move out, we identify them and we can target them. But his main effort is in the east. So we are expected that he will move forces to the east.
Advice. Yeah, General, good afternoon. Martínez de Retuerto from El País. A question dealing with the arms embargo. We've got reports that the Qatari government, a member of the coalition or the operation, rather, is eager to sell arms to the opposition, to the rebels. What would the NATO people do if arms from Qatar are entering Libya? And how will NATO stop this operation?
That's a, of course, that's a hypothetical question. We are enforcing the United Nations Security Council resolutions on the basis of what NATO allies have collectively agreed to do.
But, no, sorry.
It is a hypothetical question.
Yeah, but, no, what, maybe the answer is hypothetical, but the question is not hypothetical. The Qatari government has said that they are eager to provide weapons. They are in the coalition, in the operation. So what are we doing when one of the members of us is supplying, against the will of the United Nations, weapons to the rebels? Is they are saying that they are going to do it if they can. So.
We've taken note of discussions in several nations about the interpretation of the United Nations Security Council resolution. What you've said is hypothetical right now. We had a question over there.
Don Melvin, Associated Press. If you'll permit me, General, a layman's question as I try to inform lay people. If I understand yesterday's statistics right, about 75% of the planes that left on strike sorties returned without deploying their munitions. Is that a normal for combat in general? And with respect to Libya, what are the most common reasons that they return without having deployed the munitions? What may be a related question also is, as the perhaps easier targets were taken out earlier, has the pace dropped off, particularly since the United States has withdrawn, both with respect to total sorties and with respect to actual strikes? Thank you.
Is 75% normal? I think each conflict or each has its own characteristics, so it's very hard to define what is normal in such a situation as we have. So, but statistics, you can go everywhere. So I won't want to say something about that if this is normal, comparable to other operations, other crisis areas, other wars. It's hard to say. But of course, the reasons why don't they use their weapons? Well, if they don't identify a target, or if they don't have a positive identification that is a target they are allowed to engage, or we see the target but we see that there are also humans being used as shields, then we don't engage. And then they come back, they have identified but not engaged. And then they come back with the ammunition. I don't think that the pace has gone down. I think we have maintained a very high operational tempo. But what we have seen, of course, that in this dynamic situation, fluid situation on the ground, every minute the situation has changed, that we have seen that the change of tactics, we have seen that in the early days of the coalition there were completely different targets being engaged. So the situation is totally different, so don't compare it. But the operational tempo has stayed the same.
And our duty under the United Nations mandate is to protect civilians. We take that duty very seriously. Unfortunately, the Gaddafi regime doesn't take its duties as seriously. They are the ones who have been systematically attacking civilians, cities, using shells, tanks, snipers against civilians, attacking their own people.
Am I gathering that basically that human shields or weapons being hid in populated areas is one of the primary reasons that the planes are returning without dropping their munitions? Is that right?
It's one of the reasons. We also have had some impact of the weather a few days ago that they could take off from their airfields, went across Libya where the weather was bad, so they were not able to see what was happening on the ground. So it's a combination of factors.
Laurent Thomé with Agence France-Presse. You mentioned that General Bouchard said 30% of Gaddafi's military capacity was taken out. Is that since NATO took over or since the March 19 coalition strikes began? And also on the investigation on the incident a few days ago, could you tell us what planes from what country were involved in that incident? And do you consider this matter closed and nothing, there will be no repercussions to whoever decided to launch the strikes?
The first question about the percentage, that's the result of coalition and the NATO operations after that, the 30% ratio. With regards, you call it an investigation. There is no formal investigation. And we consider, as I told earlier, that this assessment of what has happened as closed.
Surely you know what planes from what country were involved in the incident. Can you tell us that?
No further details.
We've said from the very start that we were looking into this incident. We take any reports of civilian casualties very seriously, but clearly if somebody fires on our aircraft, those aircraft have the right to fire. It is their right of self-defense, and our forces have the right to self-defense in any NATO operation. We have, Ana over there.
Thank you. Ana Pisonero from the Spanish news agency Europa Press. General, I don't know if you can confirm how many air assets the United States have taken off under NATO control. I understand that UK has announced that they will be sending 4 extra Tornadoes. I understand that maybe there's a gap there in airlift capacity, especially to do these strikes. So I don't know if you can elaborate a little bit. And just to be very clear, you said that national assets not under NATO control are today doing some humanitarian operation support. But in any case, any country operating inside NATO coalition or under NATO mandate could decide, if they wanted to do airstrike operations under national assets. Do you have an agreement that this will not happen and that it will be kept under NATO control in the near future? I'm thinking if maybe we don't reach the number of assets we now need after US is taking off some of theirs. Very critical. Thank you.
Once again, all the airstrikes conducted are conducted with under NATO command. Only if a nation decides on a national basis to support humanitarian assistance, flight or shipment, to use a ship for an escort or planes to fly above that ship, they can do that on a national basis, but they have to take those assets out of the NATO command and control structures and do it on a national basis. But of course, that has to be coordinated so that we know. With regards to the assets, I think it's for nations to say what is their contribution or stopping their contribution. And with regards to what the US has decided, they have decided that their strike assets are no longer immediately available for NATO operations, but they are continuing to provide other assets like air-to-air refueling, assets in order to do intelligence, surveillance operations. So they are still providing assets as part of this operation. And of course, we are very happy that one nation already decided to bring in additional strike assets. And we are very happy with that. But it's for nations to declare what they contribute or when they stop and they pull back.
We have lots of follow-up questions, but there's one last question from Brooks, and I think we'll have to finish then.
Yes, Brooks Tigner, Jane's Defense. You say that there's been sniper fire and that use of human shields in close urban environments. Sniper fire can't be detected by AGS assets from abroad, from high up in altitude, nor do you know who's doing the sniping. And human shield activity is more accurately detected by close-in drones. And so unless you are flying drones into an urban environment or you have intelligence on the ground to pinpoint and identify the snipers, how do you know who the snipers are and how do you know about the shield activity in close urban, closed areas? Thank you.
Yeah, to detect where a sniper is and where he's firing from, where he's coming from, I think you're right, it's hard to detect that from a plane above or from a drone. But human shields, before pilots from a plane engage a target, I think they can have a good feel whether there is a human shield being used or not.
How can you verify that it is the Iraqi forces that are doing the sniping?
It doesn't matter who does the sniping. We are protecting civilians from attack and the threat of attack, and also protecting civilian populated areas from attack and the threat of attack. That is our mandate. That's what we're doing. Thank you very much.